put some really good criteria, let's say knowledge of central bank details, blah, 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 coming from banking sector, blah, whatever, however. And then, because being elected gives the power to decide for the public and for the, let's say, state, not for the government, I mean, which is always changing. From that perspective, maybe we can play a little bit with this idea and say we need something, a mix, let's say, which gives the power of election, but also sanction possibility of being of doing something wrong, which means to be not elected again. So that is the point I am looking, coming from an angle, without saying that is the solution. I say that maybe should be thought a little bit deeply from experts, okay. Democratic experts.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about now how can we solve all these problems technically, what's the independence, but in general I think when we change this monetary system, there will be a push forward to an ethical progress automatically, I think. We have talked about the safe haven, this cuenta una safe haven, the secure money, and so the people are much more conscious about how to invest this money, and all these relevant points that gives the whole population, I think, a push forward to an ethical attitude, and that could help to resolve lots of questions we have to resolve now. How could be an independent bank? It's a kind of consciousness in the population when they know how the system works. That's my hope.
Okay.
And then I have a question. That's the Bank of International Settlement. I mean, historically, it's quite awful fame. I think it's terrible fame. I mean, the Second World War with Hitler and the Nazis and the robbery of gold and occupied countries, and then the Bank of International Settlements, they all these central bankers, they come together and they deal with all these goals, the Central Bank of England, etc., etc. What's this institution? I very little literature about this bank, and there every three months they come together and they talk about something.
You mean the Basel Bank?
The Basel Bank, the Bank for International Settlement. And except of two or three central banks, I don't know, either Iran or North Korea and another bank, isn't member of this Bank for International Settlement. That's I think that a lot of influence in the independence nowadays, independence, pressure of all of the central banks of the world, comes also from these center and three schools.
Okay, important role. So they set standards.
I ask you because I have a book or two books, and it isn't really clear what's the aim of this bank and what they really are doing.
Yeah, they are permanently looking for.
Has to do with the new funds.
No, they want to.
Sorry, you don't listen. So, could we clarify it later? What is exactly doing? Because we have a lot of people. One, two, three, four.
No, one,
I don't know who was first.
I was there first.
Okay.
So thank you for this. This issue of independence and autonomy is crucial. This is the debate that's raging in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And the problem we're having is, how do you reconcile this notion of independence and autonomy with accountability? Because they're unelected, what you say, this unelected power that Paul talks about. And this idea that the Monetary Policy Committee is unaccountable. We don't even know who they are. And they are setting this, and you know, they are managing the monetary system. We don't know who they are. They say they are autonomous, independent. We do not have to account to anybody. He's become more arrogant than Ben Bernanke. Really, he's become a problem to such an extent that he is under threat because his term is up. And he got Christine Lagarde to come and visit him personally in December to show that my power does not come from you. I work for the IMF. You touch me, you are going to... And Christine Lagarde visited him first, and as an afterthought, paid like a 15-minute visit to the president. So this is really important, because I understand the importance of independence and autonomy, so that you don't have the government of the day interfering with, you know, calling up the governor and saying, you know, you do this. But where does the accountability come from? That's it. Thank you.
Just have a short answer to the question.
Who's going to answer this question?
Should we answer this question?
Yeah.
Where does it come from? The accountability. Yes, you have to put it in the statute of the independence. You have to write it clear in the law.
The accountability.
But how? Yeah.
How, to whom, in which way?
Yes, how do they? Because
they're not accountable.
If you give the power to this independent agency, it's kind of the design, how you define it legally. And if you write, okay, central bank has to, it isn't in the law, central bank has to publish a report, what they are doing, and they have to answer questions, for example,
they do this. But and they say, yes, we do it, here's our report, we met, this is
but
what
you
we
say
decided,
it's even not known.
But we are not accountable to you. So inflation targeting is, you know, they say this 2-6% inflation targeting. When our unemployment is through the roof, you know, and they say, no, but we that's not our job, we just, you know, lay the price to them.
Yeah.
It's not serving our interest of the country.
Sure.
We are not open discussion now. Do you want to open the discussion?
No,
on this
I'm
point?
Just asking, how do we reconcile this notion of independence and autonomy with accountability? Because they are conflating two issues. You're conflating independence with accountability. It's two different things.
Right.
And they're conflating.
Yeah. And have you developed some idea how to find some compromise?
Maybe in this book there's some ideas.
We are going to have to.
You ask Paul Tucker.
I will ask. But okay. Paul came and advised them. Paul, like I said,
yeah.
He was one of, when he was with the Bank of England, he came and gave the masterclass to our Reserve Bank. So I don't know what he told them, because they are very arrogant. They are accountable to no one.
Okay. So please hear.
Okay. First let me say, I haven't studied the European Central Bank and the relationship to your central bank, so I can't really talk to that. But I just want to say a few things that I know from my history in the US and Canada. I'll say Canada, because if you know COMA, which is a monetary reform, then you know that when their Treasury Secretary went to the BIS, in 1974, he returned and stopped from that point on the Canadian public central bank from issuing money for the people. Like, that's their goal. That's my feeling. They don't want a public central bank that can issue money to the people, public money, debt free. So in the US, the history of our current central bank, the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve law was devised surreptitiously And their control of the media allowed them to present it to the public and to the politicians as if it was something coming from the public, from, you know, the politicians having studied this, but no. And the key point is that even at that point, that's 1913, the public did not understand what this central bank was doing. They were told things by the media, by the bankers. And the bankers are so devious. I don't know if there's devious here. Because what they did was they had once they presented the bankers, you know, got this first bill presented right to the public and to the politician, and it failed. So then they presented a second bill, and the bankers wanted that second bill. The bankers said, "Oh, we don't want that. We don't want that." So the people felt like, oh, that must be good, because the bankers, the public, you were saying, we don't want that, don't vote for that. But they wanted it. It's very devious. So my experience from studying the history is that the central bankers are in the pocket of the commercial banks. Because the government, the American government, is in debt. They need money. What are they going to do, right? They're dependent on the credit market. They're dependent on selling loans in order to get money for our government, you know? So they're dependent on the whole financial system. Anyway, I'm going on and on.
Okay, what's next?
I wanted to raise the issue of the BIS that Manfred raised, because we have to look at the so-called independence of central banks in relation to BIS. And I'm always concerned about news that are not news. I mean, whatever we hear can be manipulated, but it's innocuous. Is what we don't hear that is the real issue. And we don't know exactly, as Manfred was saying, what is the connection between, really, what's going on behind the scenes between the BIS and the other central banks, and what is the relationship between the central banks and commercial banks. But the other point I wanted to raise is the issue of transparency, which is, I think, is very important. If these were really independent and legally binded institutions, they should be, and that they have to answer to the politicians that are elected, they should be able to be totally transparent. For instance, and maybe you want to confirm whether it's true or not, this Swiss Central Bank and the ECB don't issue a cash flow statement. They've stopped issuing a cash flow statement. So we don't know how much money they create and where does this money go to. So, you know, this is a fundamental question. We want to know what do they do, you know, how much money they create, what do they do with that money. This is hidden power. And just because I don't want to go on too long, I want to throw in some conspiracy theory that makes sense to me, but obviously there is never any proof. How is the pyramidal structure of the power? You have at the top some private individuals. Then you have the BIS. Then you have the World Bank and the IMF. Then you have commercial banks. Then you have large corporations. Then you have politicians. And then you have the people.
That's there are the central banks?
Central banks is below central banks are below IMF and World Bank, and commercial banks are below central banks.
Okay.
So, you know, it's at the top. You know, this is how the pyramid is.
Those private individuals that are on the top are the owners of the private banks.
No, they're not. They're individuals that basically control in some way. That, you know. Then you go. I don't want to get into these other conspiracy theories. We know some names, but I don't want to throw them in. But basically, what is the pyramidal structure, the power structure is all about. I mean, yeah, up to you to decide whether that makes sense or not from your point of view.
What's the top one again?
Private individuals, a number of private individuals.
Oh, rich.
So, Mihai?
Yeah, okay, so what I'd like to say has something to do with what Misha said about accountability. Because I think that, there are huge differences between countries, but there are many countries, and that's why it should be where the central bank is accountable to the legislative. You know, they have to not just send reports, but the central bank governor goes and then there are hearings in the legislative, whatever. It's another matter that monetary policy is, of course, set by the Monetary Policy Council or committee. And not in every country they are secretive. So maybe South Africa, they are very secretive, and they say that they don't even know who the members of the committee are.
Yes. No, carry on.
It's quite open, so no, who bring the decisions, and they have to have it approved by parliament every so often, by the legislature every so often. So,
yeah. I asked my hand, you didn't see it. When are you? Apart from the European election, the euro, I think transparency and accountability. And you said central bank is accountable to the parliament.
Yes.
So I think it would make sense to say, okay, we need ECB committee in the European Parliament, which ECB has to make reports and control the ECB. So you have this accountability on the ECB level. Makes sense, and if you agree, or Spanish or Dutch people, you could say it before the European elections. Maybe we need a better control of ECB because, in our opinion, it reached or it is out of the boundaries the legal statute gave them, and we need ECB committee at the European Parliament, which controls ECB better than before.
What means controls?
I don't know exactly. what means controls? They have
not to do this.
No, they have to make reports to this committee.
Oh, the control is not the right word.
So that's the first step. Yeah, that's the first step. We can go on. This is it's just an idea. If you want to comment, you can do it if you have the bottle. So,
yeah. You can have the next one.
I'm sorry. You didn't speak yet. So,
yeah, a quick idea which I thought might steer attention on this topic and get attention is. Maybe it would be cool to design an indicator for central bank independence on these different dimensions of independence from the private banks, from the government, accountability, formal and informal independence, and so on. And then compare the different central banks in the world, how they scale, because they are designed quite differently, like the Fed or ECB or Italy. Some are really still formally private.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that might be a really cool project, and then those numbers can be really, really powerful. So they, oh gosh, our central bank is really horribly dependent and compared. So I think that might be a really interesting project to keep in mind. I don't want to do it. I just want someone else to do it.
Okay.
For me, the independence of the is, I think the central bank should only be dependent on the law, follow the law. And the independence is normally, as I think, independence towards the politicians. You should not follow the elected politicians, but follow the law. And in Sweden, the goals of the central bank is stated as only the price stability.
And nothing else?
No. Nothing else.
And one thing more is to have an efficient payment system.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it has not the unemployment rate, unemployment as, and the growth as the Fed has.
Mm-hmm. Climate change?
And, no, yes. And these three things, if you include that in the law, you have already mixed it with politics.
Yeah.
So that's why I think this is important. And then the central bank is independent from the politics. But then the independence from the bankers and the financial industry that you take up there too. That's something behind the rules. That's something illegal, actually. It's hard to do anything about it. We can discuss it. But in Sweden, I think we are pretty good off in that sense.
Why is it illegal?
Well, it is illegal because if they are following the, some decision from some upper rich people, they're not following the law.
But they decide.
I wouldn't say it's illegal.
Maybe I choose the right word. Yeah. We talk about independence.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should just follow what is stated in the law. That's what I say.
Okay.
I've been wondering the whole time what this conversation is going to. Because this morning was there was there were, 2 weeks ago there was the report by the Congress where they issued the results of the investigation they carried out about the financial crisis. And they said that the Bank of Spain and the Commission on the
Securities Watchdog,
something, they were liable to watch the other way.
For watching to the other way.
To turn a blind eye.
Yeah.
To what was going on in the financial system, which was really really serious, like. The Bankia, for instance, deceded all the shareholders about their value at the time, and they just didn't do anything. They knew they were lying, but as he was explaining, they need to keep the system together. And after all, nothing will happen because they said, okay, yeah, we did that, but what do you want the financial system to collapse?
Yeah.
Is that what you want? Because that's what's going to happen. So what's the? I mean,
so it's is it against
open discussion?
No. Okay.
Academic.
Who was next? I lost the order.
This is really interesting because in the U.S., I can only use U.S. history. I will try to read your history, monetary history, I haven't. But we have had central banks, privately owned central banks, but they're presented to the public as if they're publicly controlled and accountable and everything. But private individuals are behind the scenes. And we had two in the 1800s, now we have the Fed, right? And the people in the United States in the 1865 to 1900, people were very aware of that system and the private banks, and they wanted greenback money, which had been issued by our government during our Civil War, which was debt-free, direct from the Treasury. And they wanted that. They were educated. There were many, many third parties in the United States that kept that fight going on all through the last half of the 1800s. It's only in the 20th century that the American people, that has been taken out of their, they haven't been taught in their public school systems, they don't teach it, you know. And of course the bankers are behind that. They put their tax-free money from tax foundations into our educational system starting in the 1920s, you know. So In American history, the solution of the people was always forget the central bank, have the treasury issue debt-free money direct. Yes. Because how are you going to control the central bank? They have historically they saw it's impossible.
Yeah.
And think of England. This is, I always remember this. When the Bank of England charter was created, the first thing the bankers did was take their paper money, you know, that they got free from the crown, right, to loan out, and they took it into Parliament and they bribed the parliamentarians because the government was the only thing that could take their power away, because the government is the only thing that can change the law. Mm. These are basic things, you know, power things.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't rely on independent central banks, give it to the government, the power.
The government should come from.
And you would say, no, they create too much money. Okay.
About 15
that's
minutes.
A lot.
Here, how much?
15?
15?
Right.
Okay, here. Okay.
Can I just say something, Klaus?
I'm sorry.
You made a comment about the government makes too much money.
Yeah.
That's not true in the United States. The history, our government did not overissue at all.
Yeah.
In fact,
exactly.
They underissued any public government money
Germany
from
now.
The treasury.
Yeah.
That's
a lie that the
that
government's overissued.
They
okay.
overissued for the Vietnam War, and that's how they got
the
out
banks
of
did.
All of them.
The banks did.
This,
oh, but the
government.
We're not
talking about the banks.
That's an interesting
question.
Stop.
I was just going to say one more thing to add to you, to your historical aspect of American history and monetary affairs, is the fact that he who controls money controls legislation.
The world.
And the politicians.
Yes, the world.
Yeah.
And that's the issue here today.
Okay.
That was the case earlier. I'm going to make a question, basically. So, when I tried. When I tried to explain to my friends, the people that are not involved in this, okay, who's going to create the money plan? The first thing you can explain them to understand is central banks instead of private banks. But of course, central banks, who owns central banks? Then you propose a transparent, accountable committee or whatever. So what I would like to hear from you, because we have heard some ideas of how this committee should be elected. Parliament, government, so to have a clear idea or perhaps an opinion of the people of you that knows us a lot more nowadays, I would like to hear ideas of how it should be. We have 10 more minutes instead of discussing what has happened historically now. How it should be, ideally.
What is the way to appoint these members of these
committees? Yeah, how to create that committee?
Yeah, how to create this committee? Could we concentrate on these questions, or do you want to highlight other?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so let's try. Is it okay for the people who raise the hand?
I was just going to... Can I say one more word that goes still in a bad direction? I just want to add on to where Sue left off to give you a few more details of how bad it's gotten in the United States. The person who signed in the 1917 of creating the Federal Reserve Act was Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson is from the University of Michigan, and he was the head of the education committee to help create curriculum for high school students, and they took away, he was one of the key initiatives to take away political economy and thinking about macroeconomics or philosophy in this from high school education.
Hmm.
So then when you have the Federal Reserve, you have things beginning to go into a black box. So while they were so educated, and they almost won in the late 1890s, the presidency for the people with Lane Green Farmers and almost like a greenback system. What happens then is, though, since it goes into a black box, by the 1930s, our Great Depression, the people are no longer there. They're ignorant. And it's only Irving Fisher, Henry Simons, and a bunch of other great economists. And now, to prevent any of that, the Fed, as you may well know, has a budget each year up to any amount they need, because they can create the money just by spending it. And they spend hundreds, I've been told hundreds of millions. The New York Times did a report in December 2012, and there was one in 2013. But through, and I go to the Fed all the time. I'm an educator, and I get into all of their stuff. And I just watch this happening. It's unbelievable. But they control the whole, all of the university departments. They create the contracts. They the grants to any tune they need to control the system. And it's remember, this isn't a nationalized thing. It's bankers working for bankers. And during the Depression, you know, the neighborhoods in Cleveland really got it bad during the housing crisis. And the head of the Cleveland Fed said, "I'm not here for them." You know, I mean, it was just horrific what he said. And they're laughing in our faces, basically, now. And no one can speak up. So it's got to be pretty low stars.
No, it's very interesting.
I'm trying to think of now, how do we create the new system?
Yeah.
I'm having a headache.
Focus on the new one.
But we got to, Zarlanga, pushed the idea of an independent monetary authority, but I was listening to this.
It's depressing.
You know, between independence and coming together.
Even though
okay, thank you for the So now let's try to concentrate on appointment of monetary committee. How should be the mechanism to appoint these people? Okay, please.
I just have a bottle. I'm going to But I think the one thing that needs to be cleared up, the contradiction, I think you mentioned, is that it's not the central banks that dictate what the commercial banks do, the other way around, they respond. Mm. And I think that's a contradiction that needs to be cleared up. The second one is that most people think that central banks are there to serve governments or the nation state. It's obviously not true. They're there to serve, they're the bank of bankers, and they're there to serve the banks. And I think that needs to be also, that's a contradiction that needs to be cleared up. Because that is why they say, you know, we will not account to you. Reporting does not mean accountability, and we must be clear about that. Because you can come and report to Parliament, but Parliament can't ask you questions. You say, yeah, you can't. I don't have to account to you.
Right.
But the I think the in terms of moving forward and the solution, I think what our comrade there from Turkey was saying is to have the members of the MPC, I think it's a good idea, to have them also be elected. And then that is one way of holding them accountable. You want a bottle? Let's
The idea came up, there are some other critical points, but it is just a first step. I say, the election gives the power, so let them elect it as well. Who? How? We have to set first criterias. Who, whatever sets the criterias, we will see, but anyhow, some very deeply created criterias should be set. Then, it may be, I was dreaming always like that, in two steps. The first election should be done maybe in the parliament, so that the parliamentarians who are elected should nominate, I don't know, 10 alternative persons. I don't know.
Not out of the parliament.
Not out of the parliament.
Okay.
Outside of the parliament, from the experts, they can do that. That could be an alternative. Maybe an ex-central bank president, or the actual one, or someone who has worked 10 years in the central bank, or whatever, however. That could be an alternative.
Then, in the second step, it should be definitely all these 10 people elected by the public. Because without public touch, the power could not be on their shoulder. So therefore, I said, maybe two steps, the first pre-election, then the re-election. That was something, I don't know.
Who was the next step?
How did you know?
I think it was yours.
How would you know?
And it goes back.
That those 10 people.
And then sorry. And then sorry.
Yeah, was it me? Yeah. Well, Arthur, in this case, I don't agree with you and with a number of other people here. I think the way how these the governors, the governing bodies of the central banks should be appointed, I imagine that process not to be very different from how it is done today. Because you see the title, unelected power, so that insinuates that there should be some sort of election, but first point, very pragmatically, people are tired of always having to go to the ballot box. It doesn't make sense. Second is, this would involve, imply a process of, politicizing that process of central bank policy. All clientele groups would come up and calling the central bank to do this or that and so on. And that would mean that the central bank would, by the vote of the people, would have to absorb slowly but surely ever more fiscal functions. And I don't see that. Artuk, for this, we have a separation of powers. And in my understanding, the central bank is in train of becoming some sort of fourth state power. And think about the judiciary. The judiciary, you know, you say you should have public legitimization.
Yes.
Nobody thinks of intervening in what the courts decide. And the courts, how are judges appointed? They are appointed normally by the government, in general sense, by the Ministry of Justice or similarly. And that's the way how central bank bodies are appointed today. So I come back to saying the much more important thing is that the legal mission on which the central banks operate need to be much better detailed than they are today. And it's my opinion, but you see the, yeah, electing these bodies, I don't see that. But one point, Nisha, excuse me, let me come to an end. You have put that really down to the point. We have a problem here, and that is independence by analogy to the judiciary. Mm-hmm. Being independent from directives or whomsoever, but at the same time being held accountable and actually, if for misdeeds, so to say, having to face consequences. And that is a problem I have to admit or concede. I don't have an answer to that yet.
Mm-hmm. Transparency.
It was you, and yes, then here, and then we go in this round, okay? And then we finish. Okay, please.
Just to finish what I was saying before, BIS has extraterritorial jurisdiction, with its own police, with its own rules.
Oh, police?
Police,
of course.
In Basel.
In Basel.
Incredible.
It's the same, I don't know if the ECB, but ECB has a similar situation. You know.
Yes.
Anyway, having said that, I'm not in favor of central bank. If you've not understood, I mean, I agree that a Folgeld would give that kind of power to the central bank based on a specific criteria that they would create the same amount of money equivalent to the GDP the expectation of the GDP creation by Switzerland. So 1 or 2% per annum. That would put a limit to how much money they would create. So my question is, why can't the state do the same? Why can't the state have the same kind of limitations and reduce, therefore, all these apparatus that exists and have simply applied certain rules to the state and, you know, have made sure that they follow the same rules. I think that's the simple, you know, sometimes a simple solution is the best solution. And I believe that in an ideal world, that should be the ideal monetary system.
Okay. But who in your opinion is the state? I mean, in Switzerland, the Swiss National Bank is part of the state.
It is part of the state, but it was created in before it didn't exist. It was created like in the Federal Reserve. They all created central banks. When before the Treasury or the state would create money, would create sufficient amount of money. So why having these layers of power instead of having simply the state that decides that, you know, has certain rules, certain guidelines, and is accountable, and is transparent and accountable to the people. Simple as that.
But according to your opinion, who would be in charge within which kind of state body?
The Treasury.
The Treasury. Oh, sure.
Okay, Nisha, please.
Oh, okay.
And then we go here.
Who? Who do I give the bottle to? Who pays more?
You first.
Nisha pays more. He agreed. Okay.
Okay, I just have a follow-up question. I agree with you, Joseph, on what you say on the appointment of as with the judiciary. But as we've seen with the appointment of judges in the judiciary by, in our case, the president, it is also very political. We've had a case where he loaded the judiciary with so-called soft candidates, so that, you know, so that they could do his bidding. And you could get the same if you have one single president or party, then appointing the, you know, all the people in the Reserve Bank and the MPC, and that will politicize the MPC. So it is still, like you said, still a dilemma. Yes.
Okay, Lena.
I mostly agree with Joseph as well, and I think it should, the our focus should also be more again on the functional, on the functioning of the sovereign money system, so that there's not much room for abuse of power. So it's not so important who is actually, which persons are there, but that it's automatically transparent and accountable, and that there are not these intransparent different ways of what the central bank can do, regulate the banks at the same time, decide about the what kinds of numbers, give them funding and so on.
More precise definition of the powers.
Yeah, very precise, just money up or money down, and not spending it, the government spends it and so on. If that is right, then it's not so important who is there, and then maybe the current system is good enough.
Okay, thank you.
I want to agree with Sergio, which is very important. In the history of money, the sovereign power, whether it was a king, right, or the colonial legislature, which was British American legislatures were sovereign in the colony, that they, you know, they, the banks give them a bad rap. The banks want to cover up that the history of sovereign money directly issued by government was much, much better, because the banks are the ones that are creating all the inflation and the ups and downs, but they're going to smear government. But government is the only place we, the people, can make a decision to say we don't want you or we want you. We can't do that to the central bank. In, and the whole history of sovereign money issued by the sovereign government is much, much better than, I mean, it's I think the way we have to
go. Okay, no.
So you are a U.S. Treasury fan, or?
Yes.
I'm not
We have to finish now.
How it's
I'm very glad that
it's not just the Treasury.
Last two
Congress. It's Congress.
Say it loudly.
Okay. In the NEED Act, which was what the AMI and Dennis Kucinich put into Congress as a bill in 2011, the power is in the Congress. They decide what money is going to be issued and for what. The Treasury carries that out, and there is an independent, you know, we can all fuss about it in the Treasury, that is independent from the Treasury Secretary, and they're supposed to decide How much new money? How much new money? Not old money, new money. But who decides how much money is going to be spent is the Congress.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much. Last two words.
I think that the problem is that we now have a system in which the central bank works for the bankers, because they need to keep the system working.
That's the situation now.
And then the situation we want is that the central bank works for the people. And the problem is the change. Because after that, of course, it's a governmental. Nobody talks about why the Ministry of Agriculture doesn't work for the people. No, because of course they work for the people. That's what they have to do, and there's the mandate, and there was that they do. So the problem now is that now they work for the banks because somehow they need to. They are a bit of a hostage of them. And then they have to work for. It's a problem of switching this power over to another situation. And once that is done, the how is not so important. I agree with you. It's not so.
Okay. Last verse. Yes, 2 minutes. You have one.
I agree with you. I like the idea of the force power. I also agree that it's more important the details on how transparency and accountability. Still, I think it's important as well how they are elected. I don't agree that they should be elected by the Treasury because I agree that this should be separated, but you said the amount of money that is created and how it is spent.
I didn't say it was elected by the Treasury.
No.
It should be directed in Treasury.
So, for me, I think it should be elected by the Parliament. I don't agree as well to be elected by the people because we have another election, which is we have too many. Probably something like 2/3 of the Parliament, something like that, that involves a lot of parties. Among people that are actually specialists in the field, and of course at the end that has a very clear mandate about what to do and especially with transparency.
Okay,
Manfred?
No, I don't have it.
No? Please? You don't have it.
Yeah, I've gotten over my negativity because it's two ideas for the future. One is, when I work with young people, rather than be more sophisticated or talk about 1% or 2% monetary growth in Switzerland because of productivity going up or something, the two lessons I got from Michael Kumhoff and Yamaguchi, and just talking to them, from Yamaguchi I get the idea of GDP gap, and the gap is unemployment, underemployment, misemployment, you know, people being in better places for employment. And Kumhoff is saying the need after, or how much money can you create, it's not a Christmas tree, saying there's limits to it. And what are those limits? And then I think the economists sort of put in a word there. It's if you have a war or something, but it's full employment. If people are being productive and they're being put to work, and with decent benefits. So I don't worry about money as much. I worry about putting people employed. So when I talk to young people and they have a tremendous sense of fairness, they get that part. I once gave 38 lectures from ancient Babylon all the way up to the Federal Reserve fifth graders, and I said 5 minutes a day. And we got through this, and they like the idea of employment as to being a part of that equation. Mm-hmm. And so then when to answer Joseph's question with the monetary authority that decides, some of that decision is based on them getting information from the Fed and their own, is where in the nation is the underemployed, the unemployed. And it might be the legislators from the various districts saying, this is what we need here, this is what, you know, what's crying out to be being done. And then I want to go with Sergio and say, just have a lot of naked transparency. It's got to be done flatly in front of everybody.
Okay. Last contribution.
Pressure.
Come on, the solution. Now.
Make a consensus.
Three sentences.
I tell you, a solution has been found in England roughly 100 years ago. Not many people may be aware of, so I will just mention it if you know it, because you're good in the history of money. In 1914, when the First World War started, England was bankrupt. No money. So the bankers were busy trying to finance this great expense. They didn't produce the money quick enough. Mm-hmm. So a few gentlemen from the bank went to see the treasury and said, can you help us out? The person, the treasury person, Mr. Bradbury, the chancellor, said, well, yes, of course we help out, because this is a must-win situation. And what they did was they created debt-free treasury notes called the Bradbury pound. And I'll tell you, we did not have high-tech time then, but it was done within days. And it was done a very primitive note, which were only the front. It was so rushed through, only the front was printed on, the back was left. A very rough job, but it was signed by the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Therefore, it had its legitimacy. People were accepting it. Debt free, roughly 100 years ago, no technology. We all say, how should we do this transition? How should we do that? In reality, if the chips are down, or if there's real pressure like in the war situation, it can be done in days. But the other interesting thing is, and one or two may know that, George Osborne in 2015 promised the British people to pay off the last debt, the last loan of £1.9 billion within his, while he's Chancellor of the Exchequer. And you sort of think, oh, wait a minute, they created debt-free money. How can we now pay off the last debt of £1.9 billion in 2015? It's because the same gentleman who saw the Treasury Department be under pressure must have revisited and somehow said, you know, this is only a little short-term period, stopgap. Afterwards, it's business as usual, and the UK population is in debt, as per usual, and there we are. And George Osborne promised to pay that debt off. So there we are.
So thank you.
One last word, just to say, in 1914, when you were in debt, there's also the issue of Jan Smuts giving you 45,000 tons of our gold that went secretly to England to pay your debt.
The upcoming show for you.
Thank you very much for the engaged discussions. I observe there's a whole range of ideas from parliament to independent experts, treasury elected, so the whole range, we have to work a little to have a consensus. Thank you.
Thank you very much.